This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Another glorious day. Matthew Culliton is the artistic director for the ensemble The Singers. They recently released their 10th recording, and it's named for the opening piece by Jake Runnestad. It's called Come to the Woods. It's kind of an interesting story because Matthew told me he actually worked on this recording several years ago, but it took a pandemic and a wonderful legacy gift that finally gave them the opportunity to release it. That's what we're hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with Matthew Culliton, artistic director and conductor of The Singers, and they've just released a new recording. We'll be talking about that. However, let's start off, Matthew, by having you share a brief history of the group that you conduct, The Singers.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Julie. I've been the artistic director of The Singers since 2004 when we launched, which suddenly is a long time ago, it seems. We're now in season 18 and already making plans for what season 20 will look like. So there's a lot of work behind the scenes, but it's a 40-voice professional choral group, and this is our 10th recording release, Come to the Woods.
And this ensemble started, if I'm not mistaken, the same year that the Dale Warland Singers disbanded. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. I was very involved with Dale and the Dale Warland Singers for the last 5 years of the organization. I had been the music advisor to Dale, so we were programming together, editing the last batch of CDs together, pretty much getting my first graduate degree from Dale Warland University. And when Dale decided to move on, a number of the choir members said, if I started something, they'll come with me. And at this point now, we're actually down to about 4 or 5 people who were in the Dale Warland Singers. So it's not a group that resembles them, but it's a group that remains to this day heavily inspired by what I learned from Dale.
You are a protege of the legendary choral conductor Dale Warland, as you've just explained. And I'm curious, are you carrying on the traditions that you've learned from Dale? And if so, how are you doing that?
Well, I think that I'm putting my own kind of fresh stamp on some of the things that I learned that I really loved through Dale and through working with Dale real closely. A few things that I do that I learned from Dale, I always program with somebody. Brian Blessing has been my music advisor for all 18 years. I met Brian back in 1998 when he was a high school student in Staples Motley when I was teaching in Long Prairie. He later student taught with me when I was teaching at Hopkins High School. And since day one, he's been programming the concerts with me and programming our CD selections. So I learned that it's too lonely already to do it all by yourself. So I try to involve as many people as I can. Brian is my most significant artistic partner in that regard. The commissioning piece, we've commissioned just shy of 90 works in these 18 years, commissioned and premiered about 90. And we try to release a new recording every few years. This recording sat in the can, as they say, from 2017 and 2018. And it really did kind of take the pandemic to get this back onto the front of the oven, the front burner. And we're really excited about it. But yeah, I definitely have a lot that I carry with me from Dale in those days, but also from Kathy Romy with my time with her in grad school at the U of M and Matt Mahaffey, and very significantly too, Renee Clausen, who I studied with in my undergrad days at Concordia College in Moorhead.
Your newest release with The Singers is titled Come to the Woods. And the title comes from text written by John Muir, one of this country's most famous naturalists and conservationists. And he once said, everyone needs beauty as well as bread, places to play in and pray in, where nature may heal and cheer and give strength to body and soul alike. I'm wondering, how do you believe that idea relates to the world of music as well?
I think that we all are looking for ways to be creative contributors to society, and finding the beauty, making the beauty for others, is a really significant way that artists can not just define themselves, but share themselves in very unique ways. And Jake Runestad, who I think is one of the finest composers as relates to diving into the text and really capturing the words, he really set this imagery in John Muir's text in a way that I think nobody else would have captured. The loud, the jubilant, and the pensive, the reflecting. And I think these days, we're all a little bit like that. We are all loud about some things, and we are all pensive and at times maybe lonely, but reflective and very hopeful at the same time. So to me, naming the CD after Jake's piece and John Muir's words was a great launching point. And some of those things actually come late in the process. I think we looked at that CD list, and pretty early on I realized there's a lot of nature on this CD, and Come to the Woods just felt like a home run of a title and a great opening title track as well.
Is there a section in that piece by Jake Runestad that you really look forward to every time you guys perform it?
There's a section later in the piece where Jake pays small tribute musically to Dominic Argento, one of his favorite composers, and he loosely quotes Dominic's Walden Pond. The choir sings, "The setting sun filled them with amber light and seemed to say." And when he says "and seemed to say," it's right out of the final sung cadence of Walden Pond. And I get goosebumps thinking about it, because I remember the first time I heard it, I ran to the piano with my score just to make sure I heard it right. And yep, that's Walden. And that's a spot where I find myself taking more and more time over these past few years each time that I get to perform that with the choir. But the beginning is just so electric, too. Another glorious day. Pretty optimistic start to the CD, and beautifully captured by Jake. Another glorious day.
You created this recording in May of 2017 and 2018, and you have joked that it took a pandemic and a legacy donation to finally get it all together. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. The pandemic, of course, gave us time that we needed to really get serious about this project. The truth is, I actually edited the CD and kind of produced it on my own computer software years ago, and I've been enjoying it by myself or with a few friends. If I come by, I play them the edited version. But this, it needed some mixing and the mastering that you would do on a CD regularly. So we finally had time to get back to our engineer, David Tremblay's studio, and really live with it. And for me, even though I had already assembled it and listened to it, to also start over with fresh ears. So the pandemic gave us time. And a dear friend of the singers, Catherine Gettler, passed away now about 2 years ago. And left the singers a pretty sizable gift that her husband and I opted to go toward the creation of new art that would be commissions and recordings primarily. And so it's through Catherine's legacy gift that we were also in a financial spot where we could hunker down and get back to work on the CD. And I think she would love Jake's piece especially, and I know she would love the last piece, Stand in That River.
Which I'll ask you more about that in a little bit. Initially, you recorded enough material for two recordings, but you decided to pare things down for this recording, your 10th release. How did you do that?
I talked to my brother, Michael. I would edit some things at home and then send him some tracks. And we both agreed that some of the music that we recorded didn't necessarily play well with others, didn't really fit on this collection. I knew I had a really great 60, 65 minutes. And actually, I wouldn't put anything on a CD if I didn't really stand behind it. But I just kind of was wondering too programmatically if some of it felt just too heavy, too bogged down. It's all great American choral music, but, you know, I was still also wrestling with, boy, it sure looks, it's just a American white male CD. And the material that we finished with also does sort of reflect that a little bit more than I would like if I took a fresh look at it now, 4 or 5 years later. I just looked at the repertoire and kind of considered, what do we need to put our stamp on right now? It's kind of like the orchestras who do a Beethoven symphonic cycle. You sometimes ask, why? Oh, another Beethoven. But in my position, I know that it's really important that we kind of put our thumbprints on music like Samuel Barber's Reincarnations, Dominic Argento's music, all of this music, really. So yeah, it took time and it took Catherine Gettler's gift and thoughtfulness to really kind of get it spinning again.
When you originally recorded the material for this recording in 2017, 2018, and you noticed just how male, white, the repertoire was, and obviously a lot has changed since then.
Yeah.
How are you approaching things now when it comes to choosing your repertoire?
Well, we have really taken the diversity piece of the programming very seriously. And in fact, about 2 years ago now, the Singers Board started some significant work in the DEI and access initiatives of the organization. So it's been something that's been brewing for us for a long time. The programming, for instance, of our fall concert and then our Christmas concert that we've just done looks and feels a lot different than not only the programming on this CD, but the programming that we had done over the first 16, 17 years of the choir. I had always performed music by composers who happened to be women, to a point where I almost don't think about that, because we've done Edie Hill, Jocelyn Hagen's been a composer in residence, Abby Batinas has been a composer in residence, Linda Cockemeyer. I mean, especially local women composers I've programmed a lot of. So that wasn't a blind spot, but definitely a blind spot like so many organizations, and we recognize it, is programming composers of many colors and backgrounds. And so it's been a very fun challenge to try to find composers who we've never met or never heard of before. And the challenge is that a lot of composers now who are just starting off in the field aren't writing choral music. And on the other side of that, orchestras aren't commissioning nearly the amount of music right now that choirs across the world are. So hopefully we can kind of see a change where more composers of diverse backgrounds actually do see a path forward in composing for choruses. So hopefully we're going to be a leader in that as well in the next few years. And we've got some big plans for commissions and some projects and meaningful programs that are meant to be lasting parts of who we are, and not just sort of, we don't want to just flash in the pan. We need to see this as a chance to make significant change into our programming. And it starts with our mission and who we are as a full organization, who we partner with educationally, compositionally. So in terms of finding more artists of color, the challenge there too is that throughout the spectrum of ensembles, you know, we look to the colleges as sort of our, I don't want to say feeder because I don't want to denigrate their work. They're doing great work, but that's kind of the farm system that, you know, we get our artists from. And there's not a lot of diversity there. We can do a better job, I think, of just sort of reaching out to artists of color through many different ways. In terms of audiences, we're seeing a little bit more diversity each year in our audiences, which is exciting. But I do think a lot of it's going to come from how we program in the future and how we market it, where we go sing. Yeah, all of that. I mean, there's so much to look at. But, you know, part of me wrestles with the fact that right now choral music is largely white. That's a terrible shame because choral music is one of the greatest things in the entire galaxy. Anybody can do it. It's one of the least selfish art forms. So we just need to be known to people and just be seen by more diverse audiences. And I'm very positive about the trajectory that choral music will be on. Choral music also, and it's probably good if we don't put this on, but choral music as kind of a piece of society really likes to put the burdens on them. They willingly, as a field, will say, wait, there's this injustice. We got to sing about it, you know? The Social Justice Songbook, one of the great contributions to our field, is indicative of what choral musicians will do that you don't see, and I mean no disrespect, but you don't see wind symphonies and you don't see a lot of orchestras going all out to fix injustice. Some do, and not every choir does, but it's indicative of choral singers, I think, and their behavior as members of community. It's very interesting, yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of connections here that I'm wondering, were they intentional? So let's talk about that. We start off with Jake Runnestad.
Yep.
And then we follow that with a composer that really inspired him, Dominique Argento, and Dover Beach Revisited. And then we have Samuel Barber, and Samuel Barber did a Dover Beach piece based on the same text. So tell me about all these connections. Is this what kind of inspired you to include these pieces in this way?
Yeah, putting Dominic Argento's Dover Beach Revisited right after Jake's piece was very intentional. And just as Jake sort of doffs his cap at Dominic musically, I also wanted to kind of honor Jake in that way, where I just knew that would mean a lot to go right into the music of Argento. And then it was sort of irresistible to put the two composers of Matthew Arnold's Dover Beach text back to back. And they're of sort of similar vintage East Coast choral school. There's always a little bit more to it than just what songs sound good. Some of it's very selfish, and some of it I hope just works.
For someone who may be just hearing Dover Beach Revisited for the first time by Argento as they listen to this recording, is there a section that you would love for them to really pay attention to?
I think that Dominic Argento, the name sort of inspires sometimes some trepidation from choral music listeners. Dover Beach, on a macro level, is a very tonal piece of music. It's four parts with very, very little divisi, if any, come to think of it, and piano. I'm drawn to just how exposed the very opening of the piece is. But there's a passage that comes in a little bit later that I think is sort of Argento opera evocative. Come to the window, sweet is the night air. Only from the long line of spray, where the sea meets the moon-blanched land, listen. You hear the grating roar of pebbles which the waves draw back, and fling at their return. And that passage is actually one that I use for auditions for the singers every year. It's one of the prepared excerpts that somebody new has to come in and sing. Musically, as the piece of music goes, it's a unison chorus and piano. And Dominic writes unison choir, one part, and piano a handful of times in the piece. And it's a stunning effect. You sort of think of Dominic as harmonically thorny sometimes, and that finds its way in. But he just loved melody, and the unison singing of those melodies to me throughout is striking. And this piece I've wanted to record since it showed up in my email box on Christmas Day of 2004 in an email from Dominic, just sending me this new piece that he had written for Yale, Jeffrey Dalma, a fellow Concordia College alum. I couldn't believe, A, I got an email out of the blue from Dominic Argento. B, it had a brand new piece of music that we were lucky enough to give the Midwest premiere of. And I was just bowled over about five different ways by this piece. And so it's very lyrical, and I think audiences will just love it.
The set of songs by Samuel Barber is titled Reincarnations, and it's vivid portraits of real people from different Irish poems or stories from a poet. Can you talk a little bit about these people and how their stories are reflected in the music?
Well, I don't know much about them specifically, and I think what we do know is sort of guessing, but the imagery about each person reflected here paints vivid pictures.
She is the sky of the sun. She is the dart of love. She is the love of my heart. She...
Mary Hines, I sort of think she must have been the life of the party. The suite starts with this very rhythmic and dancing opening section. So I think she always made an entrance. And then there's a slow section in the middle, which I think meant to say that maybe there is something behind that facade of the entrance. And it ends just so, in a way that challenges the choir, but just makes you think she walked on air. Meeting Mary Hines sounds like it would be a hoot. Anthony O'Daly, this is the most dramatic of the three. The basses have just a drone, essentially, of Anthony O'Daly's name, Anthony, 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 over and over. And the piece starts at nothing and builds and builds. I think capturing the drama of the text and the story, he is not somebody I'm necessarily hoping I would meet in an alley someday. And the Coolin, the third movement, I think a lot of singers' favorite tracks on the CD and pieces to sing. And it's also just one of the most glorious movements of music written in the 20th century for choir. It's really beloved for good reason.
Speaking of the 20th century, I did notice that all the composers on this recording are from the 20th or 21st century. Was that very intentional?
It was, yeah. I knew it was going to be a 20th century American CD, inspired by one of my favorite Dale Warland CDs that I got to help with the edits on, called Reincarnations. And I thought it's kind of a way for me to honor Dale as well, even though he didn't write any of it, but I sure learned to love a lot of it through my work with him.
Fern Hill by John Corleano is based on a poem by Dylan Thomas. And this time you invited a guest mezzo-soprano to join you, Alma Newhouse. Tell me about her and why you're so excited that she was able to join you.
Well, Alma just graduated with her master's from Juilliard, and her name was recommended to me on a short list from my assistant conductor, Matt Olson, who's very connected in the professional singing world as well with artists who don't necessarily call the Twin Cities home at the moment. And so when I did some online investigating of Alma, I also learned she went to St. Olaf College and is a South Minneapolis native. Went to Washburn High School, and thankfully on her website, her samples of American art song, I knew would make her a great fit. I really wanted to go find somebody who could bring a real depth of soul, but also an engaging and warm sound, and Alma fits that bill. It's, I think, some of the finest singing of this solo you'll ever hear.
There's another work by Dominique Argento, Seasons, which just had its premiere in 2015 at the Minnesota Beethoven Festival. Were you part of that premiere?
I was, and actually, when the Beethoven Festival Choir sang the recording of that, I was producing it for Minnesota Public Radio, actually, from the back. And so I sang it. I rehearsed it all week with Dale. We did the meetings you should with between a conductor and a producer. And Dale is always great at working with producers because he turns the room over to you and just does what you say, which I have not learned how to do yet as a conductor. But yeah, it was a very special premiere week. It was another score that I had gotten from Dominic, all four movements. And because we were still doing the Beethoven Festival chorale that Dale conducted, and I was his assistant for that as well, I held off on doing it because I thought that might find its way into a performance with Dale. And at that point, it was pretty irresistible to imagine a scenario where Dale could premiere another Dominic Argento work years after the Dale Warland Singers had stopped existing. And so very excited to be a part of that in a handful of ways.
And this was dedicated to Dale, wasn't it?
It was, yep. Yeah. And Pat Solstad, who's a Minneapolis poet, very close, both Pat and her husband, took care of Dominic in those last few years of his life, made sure he got to the gym, prepped some meals. They became very, very close. And Dominic wrote, when he found out Pat was a poet, asked to see a poem, and he wrote Autumn and asked if she had the other three seasons. And I forget if she had them at the time or if she then...
She didn't, actually.
She didn't.
She
okay,
had
that's
to write them.
Yep. So, I mean, that's good inspiration. If Dominic Argento asks you for some texts, you go sharpen your pencils.
And it's interesting also because apparently the poet Pat Solstad said she didn't like Autumn, the season, until she wrote the poem. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a virtuoso piece for choir. Talk about the challenging parts, perhaps the wicked fugue in winter, maybe.
Without warning, his mood changes from serene to stormy. Without warning, his mood changes from his feet and stormy. He shakes his
it's a good lesson for any young composer writing for choir that even at the end of his life and his writing career, Dominic still wrote fugues and counterpoint, because a lot of that kind of writing has gone away. But these pieces lend themselves a little bit more harmonically to the tonal side. They are not atonal works. They definitely explore a lot of the notes on the piano. But I think that they are a little bit more accessible than some of the harder things. The poetry is just filled with such imagery. You have the Master Cardinal, Master Winter, the breezes blowing through spring. And at the very end, it chokes me up a little bit to think of it, but the last movement is Summer, and this being Dominic's last work that he completed, I don't know if he wrote them in order. Poetically for me, I love the idea that he wrote Summer last, so that the very last words that he set in his writing career would be this: soon the goddess of summer sees that all is proceeding as planned. Though reluctant to leave, she nods and sadly bestows her loving benediction.
That brings us to the final piece by Moira Smiley, Stand in That River.
I went to my river, but my river was dry. The dust rose up to a darkened sky.
And this is a piece that's quite a departure for you and the Singers. How did it come to be? I mean, it's kind of an anthem. I love that about it.
Yeah, it has folk music flair to it. It's very singable. You could almost have the audience join in by the time the last refrain comes in, because it's just that grabbable. Moira is a California-based composer who I've worked with once on a piece that I wrote called Famine Song, or that I arranged, she wrote. And she is such a breath of fresh air right now in her approach to writing and sharing music, and recognizing global traditions in her music. This piece, though, definitely comes back to almost American folk music, and very, very likable. Our audiences love it when we sing it. We always sing it with a guitar, and on this recording, the departure for us wasn't so much the piece itself, but that we included a bass, guitar, güiro, cajon, which is a percussion instrument you virtually sit on to play, and mandolin. So those five instruments are all played by one of our baritones, Paul Winchester, who I asked, because he's one of these really crafty, talented, skilled music people. I felt like something could be added. It wasn't that something was missing, but I knew a flavor could be added to it. And so I asked Paul to take this edited recording I had made years ago, and if he could just layer some tracks. And so he sent me five instrumental tracks that we then plugged in, and I decided where I'm going to bring out the mandolin or take out the percussion altogether. And so I got to produce kind of a different style, almost a pop music sort of style. And the end result, I just think, is sort of infectious, which is not the best word to use these days. But I think the end result is very likable and, yeah, a little bit of a departure. But I think it'll stand the test of time. And it helps the CD, I think, to end with something a little bit lighter.
And a new recording called Come to the Woods with the Singers. It's their 10th release with artistic director Matthew Culleton. Thank you to Valerie Kaler, our producer for New Classical Tracks. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.